Commerce will now come to order. It's the 28th of January, and we're beginning the meeting a few minutes late. We had a bit of an overrun on the previous committee. We're beginning at 3:22. With us, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Millette, Representative Sadler, myself, Chair Olson, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Bob Heron. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones or any electronic equipment you have. It will trigger some of the devices if it's on mute or if they're on mute. We have two bills today on the calendar. Hope to get through both of them. First one is House Bill 26, extending the Board of Public Accountancy, and it looks like we've got the sponsor, Representative Mike Hawker and Cecile Elliott. His sidekick, I guess, who's actually going to present the bill, I believe. But thank you for joining us, Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm at the moment, my staff still trusts me to present the bill myself.
Oh, okay. Well, then why is she watching you?
Mr. Chair, you know why. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity to be here before House of Labor and Commerce today. I am Representative Mike Hawker, representing the new District 27 in Anchorage. The bill before us is one of those ministerial activities that we do on a recurring basis, which is the reauthorizations of boards and commissions in compliance with the recommendations made by the state's, the legislator's state auditor. In this case, I'm here with legislation, House Bill 26, specifically requesting that we extend the termination date of the Board of Public Accountancy, the board that regulates certified public accountants, until June 30th, 2021, in accordance with the recommendations of the legislative auditor. They conducted their audit of the Board of Public Accountancy and concluded that the Board of Public Accountancy serves the public interest by effectively licensing and regulating certified public accountants. The board monitors the profession and ensures that only qualified individuals practice as CPAs. There was one finding and recommendation in the audit that was brought forward, and I would like to emphasize, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that that recommendation had nothing to do with the actual Board of Public Accounting itself. It was another one of those continuing issues we have with the division, the administrative division of corporations, business, and professional licensing, who administer all of our professional boards and licenses. And that is the division over there, the CBPL, as we call it, still needs to continue to address deficiencies in its investigative case management system. The Corporations Division agrees with that recommendations, is continuing to work to implement that. Would note that the last time the Board of Public Accountancy came up, there was another recommendation for improvements over at the Board of Professional Licensing, which has been resolved. So but this it is a long extension to June 30th, 2021. Would suggest to members of the committee that every time we have to go through an audit and a legislative process, it costs a lot of money. And that in this case, I think the Board of Accountancy is one of those things that we're going to be keeping around. I don't see us letting a bunch of unregulated accountants run around the state. That could be a horrible thing.
Wreaking havoc.
Wreaking havoc across the state. And that in this case, we've got, we've clearly got a board that has demonstrated its maturity, its experience level, its ability to manage the Board of Public Accountants well, work with the legislature well, work within government as it is clearly intended to, and I would ask the committee's indulgence in passing out House Bill 26. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And for the new people that haven't, or new members who haven't been through this process, we do have several people from legislative audit and one from occupational licensing in the room, and another auditor on the phone from Anchorage if you have any questions from either Ledge Audit or from licensing. And we've been joined by Speaker Chenault. We've got a full house, literally. So any questions for either Ledge Council or the sponsor?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor. Representative Hawker, you talked about the deficiencies that came up in the audit. And, of course, we're halfway through FY13. How is the implementation of these corrective measures going?
Mr. Chair, I would make a brief statement to that, in that I have been involved in pursuing the agency over these issues for the past several years, but I would certainly defer to the agency to properly and thoroughly address what they're doing. But over the past several years, the agency has undertaken a significant effort to improve its management of the board of, or its management of corporations and professional licensing. It has included a rather significant change of personnel over there. It has included a complete, as I'm looking for, administrative improvement plan that they can talk to and address along the way. But again, for the specifics, I'd ask that you take the question up with the agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chris, who would you like to have answer that? Do you care to join us? We've got the big gun with us today.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. As far as the question in response to what type of improvements has the agency done to address the finding, we are just beginning five sunset audits. So at this point, we haven't been into the agency to determine whether they've actually addressed the finding. But I know there's a member here from the agency that might be able to answer that.
Pick one. Welcome back, Don. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Don Habiger, and I'm Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing through the Chair, Representative Herron. We've had a number of steps to correct this measure. If you might recall, in 2011, Legislative Audit did a special audit on the division. We found a number of things that we needed to correct. At that time, our first response, and this in specific, is the database that was newly purchased and recently installed when I got on board in 2010. One of the findings is that the database conversion did not convert adequately. Data was missing, and so we needed to go back and retool. There were some other issues that we discovered as we were going back and looking at the database. And in told, we had a task force that was marshaled, and they found 11 issues that they thought would improve the database software and hardware. So we came back to the legislature with a plan. We needed additional funding and to implement all of that suite of fixes in 2000 FY12 supplemental. You agreed with us and gave us that supplemental. We marshaled task force number two, and that's where we're at right now. We're implementing those 11 projects or tasks. We believe we're about halfway done with it. We think it's going to take all the way to the end of FY13 to get the database responding the way we all anticipate it should, which is, if you ask it a question, particularly in an audit situation, that it spits out the right answer. So that's the plan, Representative Herron.
Follow up?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Do you feel comfortable with the length of the extension?
Mr. Chair, at this time I do. We've had some earnest discussions with our vendor, and we think they are responding the way we are asking them to at this point in time.
Any further questions for Don or Chris?
Yes, sir.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a brief question, Mr. Habiger. I have talked to some people at boards and commissions, some specific boards that have had an issue with the amount of expense for investigations of violations of professional standards. Just curious, either you or Ms. Curtis, the auditor, how is there a problem with the investigation expenses with the Board of Public Accountancy? Has that issue ever come up in this board?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, not with investigations so much. As Representative Hawker said, they're my tour board. At times, well, my observation when I've attended their meetings is that, if you will, they don't take any guff from their licensees, and they're quite an impressive group as they deal with these issues.
Thank you. Good to know.
Any further questions? With that, we'll open it up to public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, is there anybody online? Hearing none, we will close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee. Board of Chair would entertain a motion.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2628-LS0154A from committee with individual recommendation and attached fiscal note.
Is there any opposition? Seeing none, the bill moves out of committee, and we'll take a brief at ease to set up for the next one. We're back on the record. The next bill that we have before us today is House Bill 22, also an extension. It's the Board of Marine Pilots, and with us to present it is Anna Latham from my staff. Good afternoon, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anna Latham. I'm staff to the chair, Representative Olson. And as you can see, you've got House Bill 22 before you this afternoon. It's an act extending the termination date of the Board of Marine Pilots and providing for an effective date. This legislation would extend the termination date of the Board of Marine Pilots to June 30th, 2018. In accordance with the provisions of Title 24 and Title 44 of the Alaska Statutes, Legislative Budget and Audit reviewed the activities of the Board to determine if there was a demonstrated public need for its continued existence and to see if it had been operating in an efficient manner. It was the opinion of Legislative Budget and Audit that the Board of Marine Pilots should be extended. Regulating and licensing qualified marine pilots benefits the public safety and welfare and protects the marine environment. So that, Mr. Chairman, is House Bill 22. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the bill, and as you know, we've got Chris Curtis here from Legislative Audit for any questions about the audit. Thank you.
Well, I'll make it easy. The members in their packet have a CS. I'd entertain a motion to adopt the CS as the working document.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt CS House Bill 2228-LS0139U as the working document.
Seeing no opposition, we'll adopt it as the working document. And what can you tell us is the difference between the two?
The only difference is House Bill 22 was pre-filed, and after reviewing the audit, we changed the date, and Representative Olson requested the CS to align with the termination date that was suggested in the audit. So,
and I'll plead guilty as I took my best guess when we did it as the pre-file, and I was off by a year, but...
Question, Mr. Chairman. When looking at the audit, it shows that there's more positive responses from the industry than from the pilots. Is there any explanation for that, or is there a disconnect between the pilots and the board? Or, I mean, maybe we can have others address the question. But
I may defer that to legislative audit.
We have two people, one person in the room and one person online that can probably help you with that. And plus, we have Chris. Chris Elliott again, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Again, my name is Chris Curtis, and Legislative Auditor. Representative Herron, through the chair. I'm going to defer that question to Linda Day, who's online, and she ran the audit and is most in touch with the survey responses. Linda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Linda. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Linda Day, and I'm an audit manager located in the Anchorage office. When we sent out the surveys, we got actually a pretty good response. We sent out 86 pilot surveys, and 62% have responded. For the 24 industry stakeholders, we had 12 that responded. So the response rate for both of them were actually fairly good. The response rate for the stakeholders was a little bit lower. We did try several times to contact a couple of the stakeholders, but contacting both the pilots and the stakeholders during the summertime was very difficult, and we believe that was one of the reasons for a little lower of the response rates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Ms. Day. Any further questions for our auditors? Representative Sandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask the same question I asked of Mr. Habiger previously. Just curious about if there's any difficulty with investigatory expenses associated with the Board of Marine Pilots. I don't know if you heard the previous question.
Representative Sadler, through the chair, and again ask Linda, who did the investigative casework. One thing I wanted to point out, it's a bit different with the Board of Marine Pilots. They have a coordinator position that does the investigations, okay, as opposed to the investigative unit, which is tends to investigate a lot of the occupational boards. Linda, can you respond to that question?
Again, through the chair, is the question regarding the expenditures for the investigations or just the process of the investigations?
I guess I would say they're inextricably linked to the decision to conduct an investigation and any associated costs. Is there any objection by the members or the licensed pilots as to the process and the expense it entails for investigation?
Through our review of the Sunset, no. We found that they were investigating the cases, and the process was reasonable.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, should substantive questions about the Marine Pilots statute be addressed in this day in Anchorage, or is there another?
Actually, we have one Marine Pilot online calling in from, I believe, Dutch. No, yeah. And we've got a gentleman that represents the Marine Pilots in the room, so I think one of those might be appropriate.
All right. Then I'll wait.
Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you.
And Anna. Paul Foos. With that, we're going to go to public testimony, and the first one that I see that's on the list is Paul Foos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Paul Foos, representing the Southwest Alaska Pilots Association. And what you see before here is just kind of a one-liner extending the board. But about 10 years ago, there were some difficulties between the pilots and industry and just the whole makeup of it. So there was a major historic compromise struck at that time. And I just want to tell you just a little bit about that because it'll help you understand how the board operates. You know, pilots are required, so it does create a monopoly in the sense that you have to have a pilot. So how are you going to set the pilotage rates with the industry? But what was set up is that the pilots have to post a tariff. We went for a more private sector approach, basically. Both sides wanted that rather than having the government set the rates for Marine pilots. So the pilots post a tariff. If the industry thinks that's too high, they can come in and challenge it to the board. If the pilots have not justified that tariff, the board says, we're rejecting your tariff, and you go back to negotiations. But there's quite a bit in the audit about this. It shows how this system really works. And in almost all cases, as it gets close to the board, they either strike a deal, or if the board has said it's unjustified, they go back and negotiate the rates to the satisfaction of everybody. Part of the reason you need that, you can't have pilots going on strike. There's a no-strike clause here. You can't say, oh, I'm the oil tanker coming in, and the pilot says, well, I'm not going to do that because I've got a price dispute with the industry. So that's why we had to come up with that. So within the makeup of the board, it's a little bit different than a lot of other boards. The makeup of the board is there's two pilots, and then there's two industry members. And in general, you don't let people that are actually, you know, operating within the system sit on the boards and make those decisions. But the decision was made that you really wanted their expertise. You wanted the industry expertise and the Marine pilot expertise in setting, you know, where the pilot stations are, where they pick up, you know, the pilots or not. But they were at equal strength. And then there are three public members, two public members plus the representative of the commissioner. So if there's ever a deadlock between the two, which sometimes there is, the public members make the decision in the public interest for marine pilots. So it's a little bit different than some of the rest. The other point is just that it's all the pilot licenses pay for the entire board. It's all program receipts. There are no general funds. So it's a self-paying program. And I think I would just leave it at that, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for introducing the legislation, and I'll take any questions.
Well, good job on a difficult topic. And with that, is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on the bill?
I saw this, Mr. Fuse.
Questions?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fuse, what would you recommend be done in situations where there's a lapse or a break in service of the Marine Pilot Coordinator? That is, there's no one in that position, and 6 months passes, and there's no one sort of coordinating public notice and testing and that kind of thing. Is there something that can be recommended to, I guess, the department for regulation promulgation or something like that?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, I'm not sure what to do about that. We've never had that situation. It might have been temporary, but, you know, there are always supervisors over it. You know, Don Haberger or other people that I'm sure would make sure that someone was at least temporarily in that position. We tend to know if people are moving on and they start recruiting people, so we've never had it. And I don't know if Don wants to address it, but I'm sure he'd have somebody in that position that knew how to make public, you know, announcements so that the board can continue to operate.
Okay. Ancillary question. I remember during the Exxon Valdez that, and this may have been the 1990 federal law, but we required the testing of skippers going through the Valdez Narrows. Setting aside the marine pilots themselves, is there some testing that goes on for all of these tanker captains and other sea captains?
Josephson, through the chair, I know that there are more requirements. I don't know exactly what they are. I know that the pilots are subjected to an extremely rigorous random drug and alcohol testing program on a continuous basis. I know the Coast Guard has increased it for mariners in general, but actually those captains do not pilot it through the Narrows. The Marine pilots do, and this is one of the cases. The board sets where the pilot station is, and they actually had set that the pilot came on in more inland waters. Well, after that, they've set it to where they're out in the open waters, and if you'd had a Marine pilot on board, you'd never had the Exxon Valdez, and there's never been an incident since.
Thank you. If I could just comment briefly, I appreciate that under the Enabling Act for this, it's optional for the board to do the testing at all, but it then says that the test should be mandatory, and the auditor expressed some concern with the oversight of that, and I said it was a comment. I guess I'll make it a question. Should that concern be there, as the auditor found, or do you think it's overstated?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, in the last audit 5 years ago, there were some additional concerns by the auditors, and they went in and completely cleared that up. And I know that there have been no issues since, and the most current audit has found that they're in compliance with a couple minor, you know, I guess it's just some scheduling thing or tracking down people that are on the move or whatever, but there's substantial compliance to it.
Okay. Thanks. I have another question.
Would you like to hear from either Mr. Haberger or Chris?
Some of these might be more appropriate.
If there's someone, I'm used to having people under oath in my business. But if there's someone who would like to add anything to Mr. Fuse's comments.
We do have a marine pilot online that we'll be getting to in a minute. That can definitely give you his perspective.
All right, let's do that.
Is there anybody else in the room? Thanks again, Paul. David Arntz, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon to the committee.
Thank you for joining us today, and please state your name and affiliation, and tell us what we're missing.
My name is Captain David Arst. I'm a Marine pilot licensed by the state of Alaska, operating in Region 3, Western Alaska. As the board probably knows, there's three regions within the state. I'm a pilot in Western Alaska, basically based in Dutch Harbor. I guess to answer Representative Josephson's question, we were talking specifically about drug and alcohol testing. Mr. Foos is correct. The state pilots are under rigorous testing. They're mandatory random drug testing throughout the whole year, set on a quarterly basis. With 80-something pilots in the state, there is a random drug testing program that you routinely and regularly submit within a very specified period of time once notice is given. That's one of the things that we operate under as a state-licensed pilots. I think to add a little clarity to the oil tankers operating in and out of Prince William Sound, there is additional requirements that fall under federal and local requirements that the shipmasters and the pilots are submit to random or alcohol testing prior to the departure of those specific vessels within Prince William Sound, and that was just an additional requirement as a result of OPA 90. So I hope that answers some of the questions with regard to the drug and alcohol portion that the representative is asking. Over.
If I could follow up. Mr. Arts, to follow up on something Representative Herron said, and I don't know if you were here 10 minutes ago for that question, but there seems to be some tension that's identified in the surveys. For example, you and your colleagues were asked to rate the objectivity of the board members, and 29 of 53 of you said that they score poor on their objectivity. This legislation isn't before us, but since we're here and you're here online, can you give me a sense of what the undercurrents are? What's going on here?
Boy, that's a tough question. I think the chairman at the recent Board of Marine Pilots meeting addressed that, and the simple answer is I think the pendulum swings back and forth depending on the makeup of the board and the specific chairman and how the Board of Marine Pilots operates. I think it is a fair system. It is six members plus a designee of the commission, and just depending on the business at hand and whether it's rate hearings or something else, the influence kind of swings back and forth as a pendulum between industry and the Marine pilots. I think it's a working system. The pilots, for the most part, at least Western Alaska, we're certainly looking for an extension. I think it's working well the way it is, and for the primary purpose of, you know, safety of navigation of vessels that are under the pilot's direction and control and protection of life and the marine environment. But to answer where the tension is, I don't think it's tension. I think it's just not an adversarial makeup, but it's designed that way to keep a good balance, if you will.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have anything else for Mr. Arts.
Anything else you'd like to add, Captain?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Oh, we appreciate you taking the time to join us this afternoon. Is there anybody else online? And nobody else in the room? With that, we'll close out the public testimony and bring it back to the committee for any discussion or any questions for Anna or
sure.
Anybody
thank,
in the room.
Thank you, Chairman Olson. I think I sort of know where I'm going to go when we take a vote on this, if we do. But I would invite someone from the auditor's office to talk about the staffing issue, if there's some cure that Ms. Curtis could identify relative to that.
Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. Again, this is Chris Curtis with Legislative Audit. In regards to the staffing issue through the chair, I believe the question was, has the agency done anything to address periodic vacancies on behalf of the Marine Pilot Coordinator?
Right. Correct.
We have found, that was a prior finding in our prior sunset audit. When we went back in, we found that the agency had established procedures to address that in times of vacancy and that those procedures were reasonable.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Well, I remove my objection to the bill, and if there are no further questions, I would certainly entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee Substitute House Bill 2228-LS, 0139U from committee with individual recommendation and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection?
No, I'd like to just say two sentences if I could.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support the motion. I think the Marine pilots do pretty heroic work. I'm glad they're there. I'll never forget where I was at the end of March 1989. I remember the intersection in Anchorage when I heard over the radio what had happened in Prince William Sound, and I hope I never have to hear or see anything like that again.
And I remember who was driving the boat at that point in time, too, and it wasn't one of the Marine pilots.
No, it was not.
And I might add, there are very few jobs when you screw up once, that's it. And I mean, if we had that, if we were working under that, we'd really have a difficult time, I think. But seeing no opposition to the bill will move on to the next committee. And with that, we will adjourn at 4:05.